My name is Victor Kubik again, and this is Inside United. We will continue with Dr. Steve Britt. Welcome, Steve.
Thank you, Vic. It's good to be back. I'm really starting to enjoy these chats, so let's keep it going.
Let's keep it going. The last program we had, you know, we talked about consciousness, the spirit man, and we spoke about one passage in the Bible, 1 Corinthians 2:11, which contrasted the spirit in man and the spirit of God. And that's what I would like to talk about today.
Yeah, I'm excited to talk about the depth of exactly what the Bible reveals about our human existence and consciousness and intelligence, where it comes from and how it works. That's what I hope we can get into today.
Right. Well, it all began in verse 7 of Genesis 2. The Lord God formed man out of the dust of the ground. So in other words, it seemed like it was kind of a lump of, of dirt. And breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and man became a living soul. To me, this is amazing, a living being here in the New King James Translation. To me, this is an amazing statement about the origin of not only life, because there was already life out there, but human life, and a very special life that was very directly created by God, part of him, and passing it on into this clay object.
Yeah, and I talked about this in my sermon a while back about sound science in the Bible, about the process of biogenesis, and it took mankind a few thousand years to figure out that life can only come from life, and right there in that statement is a biblically consistent view that fits this biogenetic principle that life can only come from life. Our life came from God, and he has had life eternally.
And that life then wasn't just some type of existence where we just stare at stuff out there, but it's got thoughts, it's got appreciation. There's some things that, you know, there's no way that we could be able to describe why that came to be, such as a sense of humor. There is absolutely no need for a sense of humor because nothing really needs to be funny.
You know, why are we laughing right now?
Why are we laughing right now? That is something that God created in us to add personality, and we have different personalities and different types of humor. It's all part of this spirit in man.
Right, and complexity. Within the scientific community, and especially in mathematics and physics, complexity has been this great mystery that everybody wants to understand because they want to know the reason for it. You know, why is there complexity in anything? Why is there a world that turns, and on that world there's a tree that has, you know, hundreds or thousands of leaves individually, and each one's made of billions, if not trillions, of cells, and just the degree of complexity of life. And on that level, there's complexity. At the human level and human experience, there's complexity and diversity. Even if you narrow down to something as simple as food, you know, the experience of taste and the different sensations, people devote their lives to it, become chefs. It's an amazingly complex world. Every dimension that we look at has more complexity contained in it than we can really comprehend.
You know, of course, to some people, what is proof to one person is a fantasy to another. Mm-hmm. But to me, this is the great proof where I would have to have more of that faith to believe the opposite, that it just came out of nowhere.
Right. The evidence is the same for everyone. It's a matter of whether you look at it from this point of view, like you said, it still takes faith to say that it's all meaningless and nothingness, versus a view that says, well, no, this was made for us by a great, loving, merciful God who wanted us to enjoy these experiences and to have this awesome life that we do.
Well, one thing, Steve, that we talked about before we even did this podcast, and that I know you want to comment on, is that if evolutionists and neurobiologists can't really inform us on these matters, then what does the Bible tell us about where human intelligence comes from? I would like to hear your take on this.
All right, sure. So the primary place in the Bible where we learn about this and get some insight is the book of Ecclesiastes. It's where it's taught that every person has an essence that comes from God. And it talks about it as this spirit in man. And this is Solomon's musing about life and what it all means. So it's a fitting place to find the answer to this question. And he says, who knows whether the spirit of man goes upward when he dies and whether the spirit of the animals returns to the earth? So he's looking at this distinction between man's spirit and the spirit that's in animals and saying that the spirit of man goes up. And that's not talking about an immortal soul, because it's not just talking about the spirits of righteous men. He's very specific to say that, you know, the same fate befalls the righteous and the wicked, and the spirit of every person goes back to God. So what we understand from the book of Ecclesiastes is that there is a spirit in man that comes from God that animates us, that gives us the ability to reason and think abstractly. That is the component that makes us in God's image, in the way of intelligence and consciousness and what we understand as the human experience.
Okay, so then the spirit that goes up, some people have said that's going to heaven, right? You know, and they have other theories about that.
Yeah, right. And the Bible certainly doesn't support that either. And the book of Ecclesiastes gives us even more insight on this. It's where we find these statements like the dead know nothing.
Right.
There's no device nor knowledge nor work in the grave. And, it, you know, my soul can't praise you from the grave. And the Psalms record many similar statements that point to the fact that when a person dies, we can take those words in Genesis at face value, they return to the dust. But the spirit in man returns to God. So a crucial point of understanding then, as we look at this and the fact that it's the spirit of both the righteous and the wicked that returns to God, is that the spirit in man is not the man himself. Right? The spirit in man is not the man himself. It's a component of the man. And as best we can understand, it's something like a record of our experiences, who we are, what we know, the things we've done that goes back to God. But it's not a conscious thing that exists somewhere. It's something that that records who we are, that can animate a body. Right now, it's animating our bodies. And if we look to places like 1 Corinthians 15, we're told that those who become God's children, who are born of the Spirit, will be given spirit bodies, that that same spirit can then animate as well. And so we remain who we are, just in a new and better body.
Right, because when I want to meet my loved ones, you know, the ones I want to meet them, not just
exactly.
You know, I don't want to have new loved ones, you know,
kind of, right.
I want to have those that I lived with and that I had a relationship with, because God is very relational.
Yeah, and actually something you're talking about, I kind of skipped straight to the reward of the saints and eternal life in these spiritual bodies, but God has a plan for a physical resurrection. We read about that in Ezekiel 37 and several other places where it shows God raising up, you know, from very dry bones and people that had really returned to the dust, and putting flesh on them and sinews and muscle, and then putting the spirit, even distinguishes there that he puts the breath of life in them. It brings them even to a similar point where Adam was formed from the dust of the ground, and then God breathed that life into him, seeing that same thing happen, and those people retaining their identity that they had in life. So that spirit in man reanimating them with the record of who they are.
And well, it's interesting that God has first breathed into a man the breath of life, and then man has been able to reproduce that spirit. Man doesn't know how he does it, but he does it, you know.
Right.
It's that life, the life that we have in us, part of that component goes back all the way to the first breathing of that life into mankind. And so we don't understand how it happens, but it happens, and then it ceases, and then it seems to be recorded. It seems to be put on a tape or on a microchip or however God stores data.
Right, right. That way it doesn't matter what happens to your physical body. God's able to. I know some people get worried, well, if I get cremated, can God put me back together in the resurrection? Well, yes, he can. God's able to make a new body, whether it's a spiritual body or a body of flesh that's new, that's probably similar to your old one at some point. A lot of unanswered questions there, but God knows a way to do this, to retain who you are. And you mentioned even man trying to do this, and it's interesting to see some of those efforts that are underway, you know, where they have this great plan where, well, if we slice your brain into teeny tiny little chunks and record exactly what every chunk's like, well, we can put it right back together. And that's that materialist worldview at work, where they think that everything is just the sum of its parts, and that if they could just get enough data on who a person is, that they could reconstruct the person himself, when in fact it may well turn out that it just doesn't work that way because of the spirit in man.
Well, if the spirit in man is far more complex than they realize, than
right.
What they were, because our brain, what is it? You know, it's memories, you know, things that have come and gone. I mean, our brain goes very, very deep. Certain things I remember from childhood is though mm-hmm. I remember being on a little teeter-totter, you know, at age 3 or 4, you know, where that goes back a long ways. It's reproduced in my mind. And these things, man feels that he could take all these experiences and put them into a cloud and then be able to create a kind of portable consciousness where the body, which wears out, could either be fixed up or a brand new body printed out, you know, print out new organs mm-hmm. and so forth, mm-hmm. and be able to download from the cloud this personality that you have. And believe me, there are people who are working on that, Elon Musk and,
oh, yes.
and others that are investing billions of dollars, you know, into projects like this, trying to circumvent what we read in 1 Corinthians 15, which is exactly the same story.
Right. They want a new body, but they don't want it from God. They want to make it themselves.
They want to make it themselves. They want it just for the few. And what God is telling us is the same thing, is that, yes, he is going to put our consciousness into a cloud.
Right.
of some sort. You know, he puts it into storage, and then he will download it into these new bodies that are spoken of in 1 Corinthians 15,
right.
which are not corruptible, that are not subject to sprains and aches and breakage and brittleness and everything, and we will live forever. It's an amazing story.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And so I've studied information theory. I'll have to get a little bit nerdy here to explain where I'm going,
okay.
But there's this idea, as people started to, you know, create computers and everything works in binary language, that they got this idea that the entire physical world can be described by these information theory principles, that everything that you or I am can be reduced down to ones and zeros and can be understood on a computer, right, on a physical machine, because that's all they see themselves as or us as, and nothing beyond that. And if you have that viewpoint, it seems very obvious you should be able to impart consciousness to a machine, or you should be able to move your consciousness from your brain to another body somehow physically, right, in a way that man can manipulate. But the Bible seems to point to something a little different than that. And we talked about the spirit in man in our last program. We talked about the fact that scientists really can't understand what consciousness is or explain where it comes from. They really have no idea and are searching for answers and not finding them, because we're at the intersection of the physical world that we can see and touch and understand and the spiritual world that God has imparted a part of himself into us with his spirit in man.
And what God has done, starting with the first human beings on the earth, is that he's spread his love and have this human being spread themselves out to create something very beautiful and wonderful. And that whole story is right there from Genesis 1 to the last two chapters of the book of Revelation, of how God is going to accomplish that and all the things that happen, good, bad, and ugly in between.
Yeah, and you know, if you look at life as a development process, even the process of a child being born and coming to develop and mature is a lesson for us to understand what God is doing with us. You know, we're even described that way as babes in Christ when we first come to understand. We're told that we need the pure milk of the Word. And we start with milk, but then we move on to those who are ready for solid food, it talks about. Just like we have a physical life starting as a baby and maturing into adulthood, we have a spiritual life that works the same way, through God's Spirit being implanted in us and then growing and developing and helping us to come into spiritual maturity until, you know, one day God makes us into an entirely new spiritual creation. So when God imparted us with the spirit in man at creation, he did it with this plan. It was to give us something that would guide us along and give us enough understanding that we could build and grow on, right? Mm-hmm. Just like an embryo that's coming to grow and develop, and just like a baby starts out not really knowing anything or being able to do anything functionally, we're like that spiritually. And that's what this whole process, start to finish, is about, a loving father who wants children.
And when you begin to think this through from beginning to end and not just kind of jumping from one thing to another, but see it as a step-by-step process, it's a very, very beautiful story. And it's one that actually gives purpose to life and gives context for this consciousness that we have.
Exactly.
Rather than people being hopeless, and when you ask them on the street, you know, like we did when we had the Why Were You Born seminars, why were you born? And people don't have the foggiest idea why they were born,
yeah,
or what their purpose is, or why they're here, and a deep sense of hopelessness. And I find that by understanding these principles, even though we don't understand them perfectly, we have context to our life. We have connectivity with not only our peers and our parents and relatives, but with a God who created us in a wonderful future.
Yeah, and what's so important is that that context for life gives us meaning in life. It gives us a reason to be here and a reason to live and a reason to pursue this relationship with God that He wants for us. And you know, something worth living for.
Well, I hope that you've enjoyed our conversation here.
Yeah,
I've enjoyed this very much. In fact, we will continue our conversations of these biblical and spiritual points about how all this come together. So thanks for joining us on Inside United. Please come back again soon for more.
This is a production of the United Church of God. For more, visit ucg.org.